Welcome back into the Red Zone Podcast. My name is Colton Bartholomew, UW football beat reporter here for the Wisconsin State Journal, joined by longtime basketball and football beat reporter Jim Paulzine. A little late getting the podcast up today because we wanted to make sure we had this Maryland game to talk about Wednesday night, and then with a late tip off, Jim had to work all night and got up early for me this morning, so I appreciate that. So, a solid win for the Badgers last night, Jim. Kind of a bounce back after a disappointing game. We're going to get into it in a lot more depth, but just kind of what's your overall take from last night?
I think it's an important win. I think anytime you lose to a team at home, you need to get it back. I mean, being swept by Maryland, a team that only has three Big Ten wins, would have been a bad look for the resume. It would have left this team with its first two-game losing streak of the season. So I think it was important to go and play well, which they really played well in the first half. We can get into this, but a win was a win. I think you needed a win last night.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll kind of intersperse some things about that Ohio State game from Saturday. Just kind of a disappointing overall showing, and then nice for them to get back. And then they've got a really important stretch. We talked about it last week that the stretch is big, and now you got two games coming up against Penn State back to back here. So we'll get into all that. Couple things that we're going to talk about, rundown of the show. We're going to talk about this Maryland game, look ahead to the back-to-back games against Penn State, one at Penn State, one at the Kohl Center. And then we're going to talk about the football coaching, quarterback's coach job that just opened up this week after John Budmeyer is going to be leaving for Colorado State to be the offensive coordinator there. And then we got a listener question. I kind of threw up the call for those late, so next week we'll get it a little bit earlier so we can get some more in. But listener question there at the end. So we will get into all of that right after this. All right, Jim, let's talk about this Maryland game. One of those games where it looked like for a lot of the first half and then after the first few minutes of the second, looked like the Badgers were going to be able to kind of blow them out and get comfortably ahead, but then Maryland makes a big run. So I guess I'll start with the first half. What was your kind of take or takeaway from the first half where they get built up, what was an 18-point lead?
Yeah, 18 points at the half. I thought it was their best. I thought it was their most complete half of this Big Ten season. You know, I think the Louisville game is kind of – it's probably the best they've played. But the caveat there is that Louisville didn't have its best player. So I kind of throw that one out. And just in Big Ten play, I would say the second half at Michigan State was pretty good, although I don't know that Wisconsin was great defensively in that half. So that's why I think last night was their most complete. I thought they looked good on both ends of the court. I thought offensively, and of course if you make some shots, everything looks different, right? And Micah Potter got them going inside and out. But I thought everybody kind of chipped in offensively. Defensively, I just thought it was a different team than we saw a month ago against Maryland. They were shutting down driving lanes. I think Maryland helped out a little bit by settling for some three-point shots. I couldn't figure out for the life of me why they weren't trying to take it to the rim more, maybe force the issue, but I thought Wisconsin's defense was really connected and sound. And, you know, it's 38-20 at the half, and you're thinking this game could be a blowout. And then, you know, the first 8 minutes of the second half happens.
Yeah, but there's one other note on that first half. It seemed like whenever – I mean, they didn't have too many empty possessions. I mean, you always do a good job on Twitter of saying the points per possession and stuff. But anytime they had an empty possession, then they would get back into the post with Potter, and he was abusing kids down there. And – I think that's something that we haven't seen enough of because Potter has shot so well from the three, or at least is such a threat out there that it changes the way defenses have to play, that he hasn't been as assertive as I think he can be down in the post. But then with that matchup against Maryland, just the size advantage that he has, like that was going to be something that he was going to be able to win at all night, and he did. And I thought that was important to see that development. Like, yes, I can shoot the threes and affect the defense that way, but when we need a basket or, you know, to establish something inside, Potter gets down there and gets it done.
Yeah, no, that's a good point because the trade-off is Maryland's so difficult to defend because they have, you know, Dante Scott, who's basically a three, but he's playing a five in that lineup and he's surrounded by four guards. The flip side of that is you can attack them down low because you have Dante Scott guarding Micah Potter. You know, Maryland would bring in Galen Smith, who's like a 6'10 reserve. But he got in foul trouble. He couldn't handle Potter either. So I think, you know, you're going to give a little bit of something on the defensive end with that lineup Wisconsin goes with against Maryland's small lineup. But the counter to that is you have to be able to attack. And I thought they did a really good job of that last night. I thought Potter played like a possessed guy. And he said after the game, you know, like he said, he was ticked off. He was ticked off from losing to Ohio State, you know, the team he used to play for.
Yeah.
And I think he, you know, I think he remembered the first game against Maryland and he just wasn't, you know, he was kind of quiet. So they need that from Micah Potter. I don't know if he can do that every night, but when he's playing well, this team is so much better offensively. And we saw that in the first half last night.
Yeah. And that's something, I mean, Maryland's unique because there aren't a lot of other Big Ten teams that are going to basically play three forwards and no real true big man. Like they basically play three wings. I mean, you mentioned they got a couple of guys, but they basically play three wings and two guards. And then I think the first game between Wisconsin and Maryland, Wisconsin let that affect them and like got them out of their game. They tried to like match that for whatever reason. And I think the fact that they said, no, like this is what we're better at than you and we're going to attack it. That's good just to see. But you did mention, and the final score shows it, they only end up winning by five, but the first 8 minutes of the second half, it was just two different teams came out of the locker room for the Badgers. Like that first half team that, like you said, was playing so sound defensively and attacking the things they needed to offensively, first 8 minutes of the second half, it was just a complete collapse almost.
Yeah, they were settling for jump shots a lot. And some of those were late shot clock attempts. But I just thought they were shooting too many three-pointers, and they do that every once in a while. And, you know, I wrote about earlier in the week that they need the three-point shot to fall, and this team is very much built around the three-point shot. But, you know, they're better, and Greg Gard said this earlier in the week, they're better when they get the ball in the 10-foot zone, what they call the TFZ, and work inside out. And we saw that a bunch last night in the first half. So I thought they got out of sorts offensively. And then Maryland started hitting some shots. I mean, they were due to knock down some shots. They hit some tough ones, I thought, too. And then all of a sudden you get some momentum and it spirals in a hurry and it's down to a three-point game. I thought that three-point shot from Brad Davison to kind of just quell the momentum was huge. And then, yeah. If I remember correctly, Maryland went down and missed some shots. So, you know, I'm impressed that Wisconsin didn't collapse completely, but the first 10 minutes is worrisome. And the last 7 minutes, I think we're going to get into that too. You look at Wisconsin's offense in the second half yesterday, it's crazy. They scored 14 points over a span of seven possessions. That's the 14-2 run. And Potter was responsible for nine of those. He had 2 3-pointers and a three-point play. So that's 14 points over seven possessions. That's great basketball, right? It's not sustainable, but it's really great basketball.
Yeah.
And then you look at, they only scored like 9 in the other 23, I think I have, or 24, 9 points in 24 possessions on the sandwiched around that little run. That's, you know, that's yuck. That's gross. It's, you got to fix that stuff. I mean, you can survive it when you've led by 18 points in a game. But it's just, it was hard to watch for sure.
Yeah. And you mentioned the late shot clock stuff. And I just felt like in that first half, Wisconsin was a lot more definitive about what they wanted to do and getting into it early in the shot clock to give them time to work off of it. Like they got the ball out of the post to Potter within the first 10 seconds. So he's got 20 seconds basically to make a move, try to get to the basket or find somebody open and, you know, continue running the offense. Felt like in the second half, they were doing something that this has become like pervasive in basketball and it infuriates me, but they wait until like the 10 second mark to start an action. And I don't get it. Like, why make it harder on yourself? And I get it at points, like you have a big lead, you're trying to milk some clock while running your offense, which I get that part of it, but it's like trying to run 2 minute offense when there's 10 minutes on the clock. Like that's not in football. Like that's just not good. And it gets you out of rhythm. And I think that was pretty evident last night that when Wisconsin was trying to do that, milk the clock while also playing offense, it wasn't working. And then it led to some contested shots, some rushed three-pointers, like just stuff that nobody's good at. You know, if you're good at that, you're going to be the best team in basketball. But things that they have proven that's not their game.
Yeah, it's a tough one for me because I understand to some degree the logic there is the only way you lose that game is if you don't run the clock there, right? I mean, as long as you run the clock, as long as you run 25 to 30 seconds off the shot clock every time down the floor, you make it almost impossible for a team to come back from a 15-point deficit in the final 7 minutes. So I get that. But I agree with you that it'd be nice to see some offense run earlier in the shot clock. I think one thing, too, and a lot of people have been on my timeline about this, I've gotten a couple emails already this morning, is Potter wasn't in the game for a big chunk of that final 7 minutes. I think that was because defensively, again, it's a nightmare matchup. If he's chasing Dante Scott around the court, it's just not ideal. He also had a turnover at the 5:30 mark. He threw a ball out of bounds on a backdoor. He thought was going to be a backdoor cut from Johnny Davis. So it's hard to be good offensively when he's not in the game, right? And yet it's hard to be as sound as you want to be defensively against that lineup when he is in the game. So it's a trade-off, and I kind of see what Greg Gard was doing there. Again, the only way you lose that game is if you
you let the pace get up, you let it, yeah.
Right, and you give up three-pointers on the other end, right? And so I think Greg Gard was going with a defensive mindset down the stretch. And, you know, it looks a lot better if you, like you said, if you make some of those shots late in the shot clock, it looks a lot better. Trice really struggled, and he struggled the game before too, late in the game. I'm starting to wonder a little bit how much gas he's got left in the tank. You know, he's played a lot of minutes, and I wonder if he's just going through a thing right now where he's a little bit tired. That's pure speculation, but again, it looks different if he's making shots at the end of the shot clock, which he's been known to do this season.
Yeah. And to your Trice point, not only playing a lot of minutes, but carrying the team, like those are hard minutes. You know, it's not like he's, you know, be able to take a break on either end because he's their best guard defender that they have. And then at the other end is leading the offense both in facilitating and scoring. I mean, he's got quite the load on him this year.
And they were, I mean, and Maryland clearly wanted to pressure him a little bit. They wanted, yeah. You know, they put Marcel, a big defender, on him. So I think it just wears you out. And you know, Trevor Anderson's given them a lift off the bench, and maybe he will continue to get more minutes. Because I do think they were, I don't know what his plus minus was last night, but he was in the game for a couple stretches where they really looked good offensively. And that's what he gives you. The flip side again there too is just not as good defensively as Trice is.
Sure. And I really liked your story heading into this game. And if you guys didn't missed it before Wednesday's game, go on Madison.com and check it out. But I was talking about the 3-point shooting, because as we've seen, like when this team's hot from three, they're really, really tough to beat, but it hasn't been that way really outside of Trice and Potter. The collective 3-point shooting really hasn't been there. And you can describe a little bit better than I can, Jim, but when you look at how this team shot in that last season stretch, that 8-0 run that helped them win the Big Ten championship or share it, and then now with the 6-3 start in the Big Ten, I mean, just what are some of the differences that you're seeing outside of just the ball not going in?
Yeah, I mean, like, I really did a deep dive statistically to compare those things. And it's a little bit of an apples and oranges comparison because you're not playing the same opponents, right? And COVID makes everything a little bit challenging this year to compare. But my initial impressions were that they were giving up a lot more points in the paint. It's not true. They're actually giving up fewer points in the paint during the first 9 games this year than they did during the final 8 last year. The big difference was 3-point shooting. They shot 41% last year down the stretch from 3-point range. And I think they were at 33% in Big Ten play going into last night. And I don't, you know, I didn't go back and watch every single game, but my impressions from watching games over this year has been that the shots are there. And that's how I judge an offense, right? Are the open shots there? An offense works if open shots are there. Now, an offense is measured statistically by if the shots go in, right? There's two different things. I'd be more concerned if the shots weren't there, if they're not getting open looks. And they are. Ohio State game, I think Greg Gard counted about 11 or 12, 13. And that's when I went through the game and kind of subjectively said, is this a good shot? Is it an open shot? That's about the number I got too, is that a lot of those shots you take and you want guys like Davison, Trice, Potter shooting them. And Potter was 0-for-4 against Ohio State. He's 4-for-6 last night. That's a huge difference. I mean, that's 12-point production. That adds up in a hurry. So I don't know that anything needs to change. I know a lot of people are calling, they need to change this offense. They need to revamp this offense. And I just think this is the offense that fits these players. They just need shots to go in. Now, that said, would I like to see some different things? Like, I'd like to see them get to the free throw line more. You'd love to see them finish a little bit better around the rim. I think they did last night. Potter finished better around the rim. I think that was a big key. So if they can pull all that together, I think it has the makings to be, you know, an above average offense, a pretty good offense. And then they're going to have to rely on the defensive end to kind of take them to this elite level that they think they can get to. But I don't see any problems with the offense in general.
Yeah, and I think there's just frustration with how the Badgers play offense when you look at how other teams do. But like you said, this fits the team, and this is what the guys that they have on the roster. And we've said it multiple times on this podcast, really, besides Trice and Johnny Davis, like, who do you think is going to put the ball on the ground and get to the rim? Like, they don't have guys that do that. So if you're thinking that they're going to somehow morph into that team midseason, that's just not going to be it. And I think one of the things that happened last night that they've got to do more consistently, and this is probably more because of the matchup, the size advantage they had, but they were crashing the offensive boards really well. And they got a lot of easy baskets off of that, off possessions that in other games when they weren't crashing the boards that hard became empty possessions. Like, I think Johnny Davis had a couple, one in each half. I know Potter did really well down there too. So, I mean, like I said, Maryland playing the smaller lineup definitely influences that and changes what they did, what they can do rebounding wise. But I think that's something that if Wisconsin's going to get to that level offensively, like, they've got to focus a little bit more on, because like I said, like, they know that overall they're going to be a jump shooting team, and if maybe they get to the free throw line more going forward, that would help too. But if they're going to be a jump shooting team, you've got to collect some of those rebounds and give your offense extra chances like that.
Well, that's a really good point. I didn't really think of that either. I mean, I looked at the numbers just now. They had 7 offensive rebounds, which isn't a massive amount, but it's enough. And it's what you do with it. They had 11 second chance points. So they're turning those opportunities. I mean, they're averaging more than a point possession on those opportunities that they get. So yeah, I think that's key. I think, you know, you don't have to send everybody to the offensive glass, but a guy like Davis can just keep the ball alive and maybe, you know, maybe present a second chance. I think that's huge. I think you're right, especially for an offense that's struggling.
Yeah, and it's weird because we watched Jonathan Davis crash the boards. He has a weird knack for rebounding, and you wrote about it not too long ago, but he just finds the ball, and that sounds so simple, and it's like, oh, everybody can do that. It's like there's just something different about reading where the ball's going off the rim and putting yourself in that position that not everybody's as good at. And you see him beating big men to spots and some of that speed and athleticism, but a lot of it is just there's a natural kind of feel that he has about where the ball is going to go and is able to get it. And it's funny when you watch him make a play on the game and then look at Twitter, you know, within the next minute or so, he's becoming a fan favorite, and people want to see him a lot more. And I think he's starting to get closer and closer to starter minutes in the rotation, even if he's not on the starting lineup.
Yeah, no, one quick thing with his rebound, he just seems to hang in the air longer than other people can, right? Yeah. I don't know. I think that's just a gift. And as you said, I think he's got – his instincts are really good. I think that's one thing about his game that's probably a little bit underrated, is he seems to know the game. I think part of that is from growing up in a family where his dad was a, you know, college and NBA player. You know, he's been taught the game ever since he could, you know, listen and talk, and I think that's huge. I can't remember where I was going to go next. The one thing is shooting. You know, that Stephen Bardo said last night, which I thought was really interesting, that he thinks at some point Johnny Davis is going to be the best player in the Big Ten. Now, he's not saying that's going to happen this year, but at some point in his career, which I thought was, you know, interesting for an outside guy to say that. I think we've all seen the potential he has, but I think the one thing, and we've said this before, the one thing that kind of completes his game is shooting. You know, he needs to become a better shooter from the outside, from the free throw line, mid-range. I think that makes him go from good to great. And I think it'll happen. I have no doubt that he's going to work on his game and improve in those areas, because he just does so many things. And you can have him on the floor because he can guard, you know, basically 1 to 4, without a drop off. So it's, you know, he's clearly becoming an asset for this team.
Yeah. If he could learn that, Demetri Trice kind of free throw line range-ish pull up jumper off the dribble, whew, that'd be the move for if I was, you know, video game adding it to the arsenal there. But, one last thing on this Maryland game, and you wrote it in your gamer, Wisconsin is incredible when after in the second game in the conference, after they've lost to a team. And I'll let you dive in a little bit more, but that's something to me that shows not only the coaches do a good job adjusting and kind of correcting mistakes, but the players take those onto the floor. And that's a sign of not only the experience they have, but just a team that gets it. You know, like, they're not going to make the same mistake twice against the same opponent.
Yeah. And I'll start off with a caveat that sometimes when you play a team, you play them on the road the first time and then you play them at home the second time. And that certainly helps these stats. But I went back another deep dive this week. I went back to the start of the Bo Ryan era. Seven teams swept Bo Ryan and the Badgers over 14 seasons. Out of a possible 96, they had 96 double plays in those 14 seasons. They got swept seven times. They were 23-7 after losing to a team the first time around, which is a pretty incredible stat. Yeah. And it's really carried over under Greg Gard. So far, 30 double play opportunities, only three sweeps. Last night was the 11th win. So 11-3 in those second chance situations, 7-0 over the last 2.5 seasons. It's really pretty incredible. I mean, two of those losses came in 17-18, which, you know, not to revisit that season, but obviously UW was injury riddled and it just was kind of a tough season in general. I don't know. I tried to ask Greg Gard about it. I think he thought it was comical that I was throwing a stat at him that he had never heard. But he gave me a great answer. I thought it was a really good answer. And the guys too, I think they do take it personal when they lose to a team, especially at home. Like, this has happened a couple times too. Like I said, a large majority of this stat is based on you lose to a team on the road the first time, beat them at home the second time. But this is the second time, I think, that they've gotten Maryland on the road after losing them the first time at home. They did it to Minnesota a couple years ago. So, you know, it's a pretty impressive stat to bounce back. And I think one of the signs of this program's, you know, stability over the years is just that it learns, it mm-hmm. grows from it grows and it gets better as the season goes on.
Yeah. And it's funny when you just think, like, I mean, but Bo Ryan was hired in not 2000. No.
Oh one.
Yeah. So 20 years in the quality of Big Ten teams that have been here, like, to only have 10 in that 20 years of sweeps. I mean, that's crazy, man. I mean, that's awesome. And Do you have the list next to you? Like, who are some of the double loss teams? Was that like the Greg Oden Ohio State team or?
No, there's a couple Illinois.
Oh, okay.
Illinois, like 2008, 2009, Purdue got them twice. That Purdue ended up being a bad matchup at some point. Minnesota got them twice. Purdue got them twice in 7-8. So Purdue swept them back-to-back years.
2009, the Robbie Hummel years?
I think so. I think that was that team, Johnson and Hummel, and they're just really good. 2011, 2012 was my first year on the beat. Iowa got them twice. Michigan State got them twice. The next year, Michigan State got them twice again. So, you know, there's not many. There's only 10, right?
Yeah. And it's a good team, like we mentioned.
Yeah, they're not losing a bad team. Like I said, Illinois got them in 2004, 2005. I think that's it. I think that might be the 10. And like 17-18 was a weird season, like I said, where you know, Wisconsin was down on bodies and got swept a couple times. So still a pretty incredible stat, I think. And you know, the other caveat here too is they're not always playing every team twice, right? But I think the larger point is 126 double plays over 20 seasons. They've only been swept in 10 of them is pretty incredible. I'd love to compare that to other teams in the conference. I'm guessing maybe Michigan State.
Yeah, right. It's got to be somebody that year in, year out successful. Yeah. All right. So, Jim, let's jump into this Penn State matchup, because this is a weird situation that happened with the rescheduling with COVID and all that. But they're going to play the Nittany Lions twice in 4 days, right? So it starts on Friday, Saturday. Right, yeah, okay. So
Saturday.
So that's at Penn State, and then they come back Tuesday against Penn State at the Kohl Center. So first off, I mean, just when you – I mean, this is – if you guys remember from a couple of podcasts ago, this was Jim's harrowing adventure to College Park and – not College Park, Happy Valley, and didn't get to – go to a game or anything, but this is just a weird season for Penn State, not just because of COVID, but there's so much going on for them off the floor right now that it doesn't surprise anybody that they're not having too much success on the floor.
Yeah, it was going to be a rebuilding year anyways, because they lost Lamar Stevens and from a team that probably would have made the NCAA tournament had it not been for COVID last year. And then, you know, so you're thinking it was going to be a rebuilding year in general. And then in October, Patrick Chambers, I guess, resigns, as it turned out. It was pretty much forced out. So, you know, that's happening in the middle of a pandemic when the team is just starting to kind of get ready for the season. And, you know, it's been kind of a stop and start thing. And then they get to late December and they go on pause for COVID for almost 3 weeks. They didn't play for almost 3 weeks. The Badgers were supposed to play there January 3rd and that game got postponed. So here they are back to playing, and they've actually been playing pretty well. They had won two straight and then looked like they were going to win at Ohio State last night and couldn't pull it out. But yeah, it's an interesting team. They've got shooters. It's a dangerous team. Offensively, I think they can put some points on the board. But Wisconsin's owned this series. They really have. And in my time on the beat, so this is my 10th season, I have not seen Wisconsin lose to Penn State, which is pretty incredible. I believe 2011 was the last Penn State win in the series. And it was a 36-33. 36-33, you're not hearing.
Yeah, that was the Rock Fight game. Was that the Big Ten tournament?
Big Ten tournament, yeah.
Yeah, good Lord.
So it's been 10 years. I mean, it's been 10 years since Penn State's beat Wisconsin.
And the funny thing is, when you look at this Penn State team, like you mentioned, they were supposed to be a Big Ten or a NCAA tournament team last year. It's just the parts don't seem to all come together like they should. Like this team has talent beyond the wins they have right now. And we're seeing it right now in the NBA, because that's how they kind of scheduled their season, where you play a lot of back-to-backs or like two and three days against the same team. I'm really interested to see what the adjustments are for both of these teams the days in between those two matchups, because yeah, you have the travel component. So maybe you're not going to be like a full on practice, but you know, if you're both of these coaching staffs, you got to figure what works game one, they're going to adjust to and try to take away in game two. So you've got to kind of, I don't know if you hold anything back in game one to make sure that you have it for game two. It's just kind of a weird thing that you don't see in basketball a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you're Wisconsin, you got to go in there and, since it's a road game on Saturday, you got to go in there and throw everything at them. I don't think you hold anything back. I just think it's another game where it's important to win, because you've lost twice at home already in Big Ten play. You got to go and win some of these road games, these 50-50 road games. I don't know if this is classified as a 50-50 road game, because I think Wisconsin will be favored by, I don't know, maybe 6 points. They were favored by 3.5 last night, which surprised me. So I think the number would be a little bit higher on Saturday. But yeah, I think this is a game that Wisconsin's got to go in and play well. They need to get off to a good start early in the game. You know, a good first 10 minutes would be helpful, and then just kind of grind it out.
And Jim, as you kind of look at the matchups of these two lineups, like who is somebody that you think has got either a matchup advantage or something that, that one of the other teams can't stop? Maybe a guy from each side that you think is going to be a problem for the other team.
Yeah, you know, this Penn State lineup is a little bit like Maryland in that they can go really small. I mean, they've got a guard-oriented lineup. Guy like Myron Jones, who's shooting like 42% from three-point range. Isaiah Brockington is a guy that can get to the basket. He can also shoot from three-point range. I think he's at like 39% or something. So they've got some guys that can cause problems. Athletic, you know, like we've said all along, Wisconsin has run into problems against athletic teams. And I do think this Penn State team qualifies as an athletic type team. On the flip side, I think it's almost a carbon copy of the Wednesday night game at Maryland. Micah Potter and or Nate Reavers need to establish themselves down low, because Penn State's just not very big. John Harar is their, you know, he's their post guy. He's 6'9". I think he's the tallest guy on their roster. I don't think they have anybody taller than 6'9".
Oh, wow.
So I think the key there is, you know, you attack the paint early, maybe get him in foul trouble, and then you make it really tough on Penn State defensively. Because again, you know, as good as they are offensively, and they have the potential to put points on the board, they've struggled defensively. They're giving up almost 77 points a game. So you can score against this team. And I would hope Wisconsin would go into this game and try to work inside out and try to establish the post early, and then, you know, kick out to open shooters, and then, you know, cross your fingers that the shots go in.
Right. And I think one of the things that we've seen as, I don't know if I would classify it as a strength, but something that Wisconsin can lean on is they're not going to give up a ton of open threes. Like we've seen them get beat to the basket, and that's been a consistent thing all year, but they do a good job closing out and sticking on some of the shooters. So when you come into a game and that's what you kind of rely on as a Penn State team, that's going to be tough to get open looks or get the looks that you're maybe accustomed to with the way that you run your offense.
Yeah, it's a good point. We can kind of go back to the Ohio State game on this point. Wisconsin didn't give up a ton of three-point looks in that game. In fact, they were probably a little too eager to contest the three-point line. They closed out sloppy on a couple times and allowed Ohio State to use pump fakes to kind of set themselves up with mid-range jumpers. And Ohio State, you know, Greg Gard said this a couple of times this week, but you kind of give them that. You kind of, these days, analytics say you give them contested two-point shots, and if they make them, you tip your cap to them. And that's what happened in the Ohio State game. Wisconsin did a pretty good job at the rim. They did a pretty good job on the three-point line, except for leaving Justin Arnes open a couple times. They really got beat in the mid-range, and, you know, that's not easy to – it's a tough pill to swallow because you're kind of willing to do that. And when the other team shoots like that from mid-range, you know, what do you do?
Yeah.
So I think they'd be content, again, is defending the three-point line. Like Penn State shoots, like, you know, 25 to 30 three-point attempts a game. You want to – limit those good looks, keep them off the free throw line and keep them away from the rim. And if they beat you in the mid range, you know, contest those jumpers and make them do that.
Right. All right. So make sure you guys are following Jim on Twitter, Jim Polzine, WSJ, and then on Madison.com as well for all the pregame, during game and postgame stuff for those Penn State matchups. All right, Jim, let's quickly talk about a little bit of football since some news happened this week. John Budmeyer, the quarterback coach for the last few years and, six-year assistant here under the Paul Chris staff, announced that he was going to be, or he didn't announce it, it got leaked and was confirmed that he's going to be the offensive coordinator at Colorado State, leaving the Badgers here. As I kind of look at this and evaluate where this hurts the most for the Badgers, I think it's going to be bigger on the recruiting side because we've seen what John Budmeyer has done, not only recruiting quarterbacks, but, you know, I don't know how accurate the, you know, recruited by parts are on the recruiting websites. Like I take them with a grain of salt. We look at some of the big names like Graham Mertz and then Deacon Hill in this class as the quarterbacks and some of the other offensive skill players that have come in. Budmeyer's name has been attached to a lot of those. So I think I would take it with some merit that the guy that's running the quarterback and kind of the passing game coordinator that he became essentially was heavily involved in bringing in those skill guys. And not only, I mean, quarterback and skill guys are two positions that historically have been of need. You know, you think you have your answer in Graham Mertz, but you got to continue getting him some weapons. And I think losing a guy like Budmeyer at this point, especially, is going to be tough to bounce back from quickly in the recruiting side.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people grumble about how many UW guys Paul Chris has on his staff, but the advantage to that is that you're sending a guy out on the road for recruiting who knows how to sell the program. He knows the program inside and out. He speaks from the heart when he talks about coming and playing for the Badgers. So I think that's part of what made John Budmeyer a successful recruiter is that, you know, he's genuine. He's a good guy and he could sell a program that he cared for and knew and loved. So it is a loss. I mean, good for John though. I mean, like, I guess you know, I didn't really see this coming. I understand that John, you know, is an up and comer. You just never know how that stuff's going to work. You need connections, you need word of mouth. I'm sure Paul Chris gave him a glowing endorsement. So good for him. It's at this point, late January. It'll be interesting to see where they go from here.
Yeah. And just from a football kind of for him standpoint, huge opportunity. I mean, Colorado State struggled really bad. I mean, they only played four games because of COVID last year, but the offense was not good. And the cupboards are pretty bare there. I mean, I don't think he's going to get judged for how they do in this first year. But there's a disadvantage there where it's going to be a struggle, right, to start off, and then that kind of puts you behind it in some ways. But then the advantage there is he kind of gets to mold it. You know, he gets to do what he wants, call plays for the first time, at least publicly, you know, that we know about. And I think that's a huge step up for him. And, you know, who knows what the future holds for him. Like, but that's the step you got to take as a quarterback coach. Like, unless you plan on just being an assistant forever, you got to make that jump into coordinator eventually. So younger guy. And I think that goes for what they're trying to do at Colorado State, because they've got a pretty young staff out there. So big step for him. And it was just kind of cool. It's always cool to see guys like that get opportunities, because you've seen what they've done in one role at Wisconsin, then they go do something else. You kind of just follow them as they go along and just see how they do, and just the ideas that they can bring. Because I think that's, and we're going to get into some possible replacements in a second here, but I think that's one of the things that's kind of become a talking point, is maybe this is a chance for Wisconsin to bring in some different ideas, or somebody in the room that's not going to be as, like, you know, step by step in line with Chris. Like, you got to be in line with your head coach, but just somebody that can maybe present some new ideas or present some different things that maybe push the offense a little bit into a different direction.
Yeah. And like I said, I'm interested to see who they're going to go. One quick thing on Bud Meyer going to Colorado State. I do think it's that level, going to that level is a good level to be an offensive coordinator at. I mean, that's not a power five program, but it's the next step down. There's a connection there, UW connection. Brian White is the running backs coach, former UW offensive coordinator. The head coach, Steve Adazio, is a guy that likes power football. So I can see why he'd want a guy like Bud Meyer that has that as his background. They're going to run the ball. They're going to play action. I do think it's a good fit. And I think Adazio is a pretty smart head coach. So I think it's a good fit for him. So turning back to the UW angle on this, who do you think, what are some names? Who do you think, what type of guy do you think they'll look at?
So that's a good question. So if they stick with the guy that has UW ties and, you know, has the experience there, Scott Tolzien's in coaching right now. He was an offensive analyst two seasons ago, went to the Mike McCarthy Cowboy staff. I haven't seen anybody that's really reporting that he's interested in the position, but I know that's been the Twitter banner of the last 24 hours, is that Scott Tolzien would be somebody that they would want to see. The advantage there, obviously, is that he played the position here at a high level and was 3.5 year starter, basically. I mean, a longtime starter, a guy that knows what they're trying to do. The only drawback there to me, I guess, would be, like I said, just kind of more of the same. I don't think Tolzien's at a point in either his coaching career or professional career that he's going to be trying to be super innovative offensively or trying to change what the Badgers are doing. I think he would try to elevate it, obviously, but I think you just look at what Ohio State and Penn State are doing offensively and the points that they can put up, and you've got to climb to that level if you're the Badgers at a certain point. And if that's a schematic change or if it's just a talent change, we'll see. But that's your competition, right? So to me, if I'm a coaching staff, I'm trying to push and elevate what we're doing or change what we're doing to a point that we can get to that level. And I'm not sure if Tolzien's that guy, just because it's a little bit more of the same and kind of has that same DNA. I don't know. I just think there's goods and bads to Tolzien as an option, but I'm sure that he's going to be a call.
How attractive is this job? And I ask that knowing that, like what you're talking about is bringing in a guy that is a little bit more innovative. The challenge there is that you're bringing in an outsider and he's going to want his voice to be heard, right? On an offense where there's a coordinator above him and a head coach who's very offensive minded. I mean, it's his baby. It's the offense is his baby. Are there obstacles there in terms of finding someone who is willing to come in? I mean, do you see any way that they would hire a quarterbacks coach / co-offensive coordinator just to spice up the job role a little bit? If there's someone out there, an up and comer who they are trying to pursue.
Yeah, it's certainly possible, because I think you've got to look at what Paul Chris wants to do. I mean, if Paul Chris wants to call plays again, I mean, I personally think at this juncture, that's probably the most likely thing, is get somewhat of a normal offseason and Paul Chryst takes back play calling. But to your point, let's say that that's not the case and they go with Joe Rudolph again as a play caller, or they change up a little bit on the offensive structure. I definitely think that'd be a possible thing, because if you're going to bring in somebody from the outside, as we're talking about in this scenario, giving them a little bit more of a say, and I don't know if control is the right word, but just a different level of input, added to the fact that, you know, you've already got Graham Mertz. That, to me, that would make the job pretty attractive. You're coming in with a guy that's got a ton of talent. You're not walking into a position group that you're not sure who your starter is, or you don't know what you've got. But at the same time, like, you want the Illinois version of Graham Mertz, where, yeah, it was 21 throws, but he completed 20 of them. Some of them were deep, making big plays. You don't want what we saw second half of the season after the COVID diagnosis and everything, where there's hesitancy. It's only a few, you know, it's 15 to 20 throws, and he had multiple games of, you know, 8, 9, 10 completions. Like, you want to, as a quarterback coach, your guy to be able to have a little more chances than that. And I would think if they brought in somebody from the outside, there would be just a different level of input that they would bring.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. Like, I wonder how outsiders view this job and this offense and the ability to kind of, will they be willing to be part of an evolution of it? Or is Paul Chryst even think there's an evolution that's required? I'm curious if you sat down with Paul Chryst and asked to kind of, he'd never do this, but evaluate the offense this season and how much of it was just COVID interruptions and missing players and all that. If he thinks that was the biggest reason for the up and down nature of it, or is there more of a schematic issue? Was it play calls? Was it scheme? Was it something else? And the other thing we didn't mention is this offensive line wasn't great this year, yes, right? Which is the lifeblood of this program. I mean, the best offenses here have been because they've had really, really good offensive lines. And I don't think this group this year, classifies as that. And again, I think part of that goes back to COVID-19 interruptions and practice and just the inability to have chemistry because of that. So I don't want to say this was a throwaway season, but I do wonder how much when they sit back and evaluate what happened, how much blame is going to be directed at the pandemic and the disruptions caused by it.
Yeah, I can tell you just from the interactions I have with fans and the feeling that I get talking to some people, like, it's being thought of as like, let's just pretend that didn't happen. Like, let's move on as quickly as we can, start looking forward here. One other guy I wanted to mention as a candidate, Keenan Bailey, he's got kind of a hybrid role on the Ohio State staff. He's listed as an offensive analyst, but he works pretty closely with the quarterbacks and the offensive coordinator in Ryan Day. He's a guy that's been reported on a few times about being ready for a jump and kind of that next wave. Because, I mean, Ohio State's been kind of a proving ground of sorts for I don't know if it's fair to say lower level coaches, but just not exactly position coach or, you know, coordinator level. But guys that get their start there as a GA or as a quality control person, stuff like that, very quickly learn the standards that they got to hold themselves to, the things they can do offensively to kind of jumpstart an offense. And I think he'd be a guy that would be interesting if he's looking to make a move, just because I think, and Graham Mertz is not Justin Fields or that level of, you know, mobility and athlete and everything, but when you just look at the passing game, you know, skill-wise, I think he's on the level of thrower that Justin Fields can be at his best. So I think that's something that could be interesting to a Wisconsin if he was ready to make a move.
Interesting. And that's you know, that's why I'm curious which way Paul Chryst goes. He's been around the business long enough that he has connections. There could be a name out of left field. Like, you know, when Elvis Woodard was hired last year, that was a little bit, you know, that wasn't in the UW family by any means. He had coached the Packers, so there was a state connection. But I think there's going to be a lot of applicants for this job, and it'll be interesting to see kind of where he goes to fill this spot.
Yeah, and I think this is a really interesting position coach to fill, because this is such a crucial time for the quarterback spot. You've got Mertz, so, and you know, the offseason development of him, to me, makes or breaks next season. If he's, you know, a significant step better than he was this year, you've got a chance to be a really good football team. If he stays what he was, or, you know, even moves back, you're in trouble, to me, offensively. I mean, I just don't think you've got the position or the people around him that they can elevate him. He's got to elevate what's around him from the quarterback spot. And then you look at what else has happened this offseason at the quarterback room. Jack Cohn transfers. You lose a veteran voice, and a guy like, if Mertz was really struggling next year, maybe Cohn would have been able to step in again, or, you know, just a lot of different things that he brings to a room, and he's not going to be there anymore. So you're going into a season with basically Mertz, who's got 7 games of up and down COVID experience. Wolf, you know, didn't show a ton as a thrower when he came in. I mean, he made some tough decisions. And then you've got inexperienced guys like, I mean, older, but inexperienced in Vandenboom, and then a freshman coming in Hill, and then a walk-on in Daniel Wright. So, I mean, this is a really important offseason for this quarterback room to really grow, and especially for Mertz. And that to me makes this quarterback position hire super important, because this person, probably more than anybody else, is going to be responsible for getting Graham Mertz to that level, you know, matching his potential with his output next season.
Oh, by the way, you're heading into another off season that's at least going to be partly affected by the pandemic again.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I mean, like, that's the thing. It's when you're talking about bringing in a new coach and development and all that stuff, it's going to be a challenge again, because, you know, we're not out of the woods yet with this by any means. And I don't know when, I mean, I don't know what spring football is going to look like. None of that. And off season, there's so much unknown. Like, you hear that every week from every sport, that there's the unknown is kind of what's crazy about this. And I think it's the same thing with football. So it's an interesting time to make a hire. And, you know, like, hiring Kalaji made a lot of sense to have stability, right? A guy that they knew. This one is not going to be necessarily a guy that they know, unless you bring in Scott Tolzien, if he's willing to make that jump. I mean, like, I think like you said before, I think they make that call to Tolzien. And I think if Tolzien's willing to come back, I think it's probably a no-brainer, easy hire in the middle of a pandemic, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the path of least resistance, I guess you would say.
It's just a matter of whether Tolzien, is that something he wants to do, or if he wants to kind of continue in the NFL in that role. I don't know. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Wanted to get to a listener question. Like I said, I threw this out kind of late, so we only got a couple, but we already kind of answered one of them as we were talking. So the other one we got from Steve Baining, and this is more for you, Jim. We want to know about Ben Carlson. Is there any news on him? I know that there's the injury factor for him, and that's kind of been murky. He got minutes in the first few games as they were figuring out the rotation, but now we haven't really seen him. So what's the update that you can give us?
Yeah, the update is not that there's not much of an update. It's status quo. He's out indefinitely with an upper body injury. I did not expect him to play again this season, and that's not any insider information. I just think at this point of the season, you're now in the second half of Big Ten play. It'd be hard for him to get in the rotation and establish himself after he's not even practicing at this point. So I just think this is going to be, you know, kind of a lost season for him, and you hope he bounces back from this ailment and can help you in the future, but not really any update. He goes on trips. He travels with the team. He's there for home games. So he's still around, but nowhere near playing.
Yeah. And that's one of the worst parts about this COVID year of not being able to be there, is that you don't get to go to practice. You don't get to see what he's doing at practice, if he's working out or if he's able to play 5-on-5 or whatever he's able to do. So this is, you know, inside baseball for reporters, but this is rougher than just, you know, the games being weird, no fans being in the stands. It's just a different year being able to figure out things about these teams.
Yeah. It's like, I just had this conversation with someone last week, a former guy who's out of the business now. It's just, you know, conversations you can have on the side with coaches, just to, you know, not even on the record stuff, just to find out tidbits, just don't happen anymore. And it's really hard to know. As a beat writer, you kind of hope you know everything or most everything about a team, and it's, and this situation leaves you kind of feeling like there's so much you don't know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. All right, so as we wrap up the show here, Jim, was there anything coming up in the next few days people should be looking out for on Madison.com?
No, I mean, at some point I'm going to write about this unique Penn State matchup twice in 4 days. I think I'm going to write about just how much success Big Ten road teams are having. Greg Gard mentioned last night how eerie it was at Xfinity Center, just with nobody around. That's usually a place that's buzzing. That's that was typically one of my favorite road trips, because the energy in that building is always exciting. And I wasn't there. I didn't travel this week. But Greg Gard was saying that it was it was quiet, and more quiet than I think even compared to other venues they've been to this year. So he just thought it was bizarre. And that's, I think, part of why Big Ten teams on the road have been able to have some success. It's flipped around for Wisconsin. They've, you know, they're now, I think, 3-1 on the road in Big Ten play, 4-2 at home. So it's going to be interesting. They've got some tough road games coming up: Iowa, Illinois, Purdue yet to go. Those places aren't quite as daunting as they were when the place is packed. So maybe Wisconsin can do some damage on the road down the stretch.
Yeah, and I think this year, and I guess you could say even this summer and everything like that, I think people understand more and more like how much fans and atmosphere make sports. You know, it's, you know, you can still, I mean, I watch a lot of these basketball games on mute and as I'm doing other things, but like the atmosphere as a whole really changes these games. And that's just a fact that it's indisputable.
Yeah, it really is. I kind of poo-pooed this early in the season when some Big Ten, I don't know, when I mean Big Ten team, is just teams in general went on the road and they're like, well, there's no fans. I'm like, you know, you're still the home team. You're in a gym that you're used to. And I thought that would rule out, you know, I just thought that would win out the fact that these are rims that you're used to. It's a setting that you're used to. You're sleeping in your own bed. I thought that would still mean a lot. And lately it hasn't. The Big Ten road teams have been, you know, playing at above 500 clip this month. So it's kind of interesting to see it all play out.
For sure. For sure. From me, I'm asking that coming up, hopefully early next week, we'll have something on some recruiting stuff going on here in 2021, as I mentioned, for the 2022 class. As I mentioned a couple of podcasts ago, it's been a slow start and it stayed that way here for Wisconsin the last few weeks. So hopefully you have something on that. And then, National Signing Day is next week also. Doesn't really matter for the Badgers, but we'll look into that, just kind of why that matter or why that is this cycle for the Badgers not having to really bring anybody in for the 2021 class here in February. So some stuff going on there. And then we're going to get into bracketology. It's almost tournament time, Jim.
Yes. You say that knowing that how hell could break loose in the next month. But we're about a month and a half away from the NCAA tournament scheduled start. One thing we didn't talk about on this, maybe we can touch on this next week, is the notion of the Big Ten tournament and what it would look like. It's such a weird year because so many teams are going to have to make up games as this season carries on. And, you know, what will the Big Ten tournament look like? Will all 14 teams go? I'm starting to doubt whether that's the case.
Yeah, same.
Why would you bring a Nebraska, which has had a lot of COVID issues? Why introduce more people into the mix? So I'm curious to see what the Big Ten decides. I know they've talked about it. Greg Gard said they've talked about it. We don't really know what was going on in those discussions. But I'm starting to wonder if there's going to be kind of a reduced field for that tournament. I don't know what the number would be, but a team like Wisconsin doesn't really need it. And yet I think the Big Ten will definitely want a team like Wisconsin there, right? You're going to want your best teams for TV purposes. So I think we'll find out more in the next month about what that's going to look like, but I'm starting to wonder just what they'll do. And frankly, I think it's scheduled for Chicago tentatively, but my guess is they're going to play in Indianapolis.
Then
you're looking at a really long stay in Indiana in March.
Yeah.
If you're a Big Ten team.
Yeah. Well, we're going to table that one and definitely talk about it for next week. Cause I'm totally with you. there is no reason for it to be a full field like usual and double buys and all that stuff. Like, yeah, I definitely think we're going to get some clarity relatively soon on what that's going to look like. But we will talk about that next week. But, Jim, thank you so much for jumping on here in the morning after a long night working. And make sure you're following him, Jim Paulzine, WSJ on Twitter. You can follow me as well, CBartWSJ on Twitter as well. For Jim, I'm Colton. We will be back next week. Thank you guys very much for listening.